Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the psychology and personalities of political life. Lots of us watch politics from the outside, but what is it really like to be in it? And with so many MPs choosing to step away from politics, have we moved beyond the era of being a politician for life? And if so, why might that be? To help me pull back the curtain on this, I am delighted to be joined by Strategy and Communications Executive and Tech UK Board Member, Kulveer Ranger. Hello, Kulveer.
Hi, Lucy.
Great to have you here. Now, you're fascinating because you've been in politics and you've taken a step away. What originally took you into politics?
Well, it's always a complex question about what drives you. But personally, it was as I became more involved in my professional career and I was looking at the delivery of major public services, infrastructure projects. Famously, I worked on with many, many people the delivery of Oyster Card in London.
Yeah.
You know, you could see the transformationary power of getting exciting new public services right. However, as everyone will probably realize over the years, we've got a lot of these things wrong and a lot of time, effort, and taxpayers' money gets wasted. And I personally could see that on the things that I was getting involved in and felt ever more drawn to what were the political challenges that were leading to some of these deliveries not working out and how could potentially I help in that arena. And that got me more engaged in London politics, national politics, the Conservative Party, to the point that you suddenly find yourself, one way or another, embedded in the political world.
And it's interesting because you mentioned the Oyster Card there, but you've also been working, you were responsible for the team behind the Boris bikes, and you did a lot of work around increasing the number of charging points so that the rollout of electric cars could be something that was maybe more affordable or even more visible for people. Is it always about transport for you? Was that always your passion?
It was actually about change. Transport seemed to be, if you pardon the pun, the vehicle that enabled
like
change.
Like what you
to
did
happen.
There. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm here for the next 15 minutes or so. But the thing that happened was that it was what was delivering change. And transport is such an important part, mobility as we now call it in the modern era. But actually that entwines into design and the structure of our lives based on how a city works. So if you go from transport to design to city to how we live our lives, it's all comes together in terms of what's your vision for what your life should be like. You know, should your ability to get from A to B and how you do that, do you have to go by car? Can you go by bus? Can you go, was bus just something for people who were working class and cars were for people who could afford to have them? Do you remember those days when, you know, if you went by bus, there was an implication you weren't successful. Soon as the Oyster Card came out, we got lots of buses and London became an area that had great routes. Well, let's go by bus and actually let's bring a brand new route master. That's the most efficient, bus that you can design. And it's been all of this is interwoven with the huge improvements and the leaps we've had forward with technology. And technology has driven everything. So the backbone to all of this, and I'm not a techie, but I love what technology does for society and for us. But how do you make sure that it really does work for us and it isn't something that kind of keeps going forward and doesn't take the rest of society with it? And that's the balance that I think every policy in government or every public service that you deliver needs to kind of ring true with. Can it work for everyone, even though it's innovation and even though it might be taking a giant leap forward in how you did things in the past? So it's change. At the end of the day, it's change.
Yeah, because the voter really doesn't really care about the theoretical dimension of any policy. They just want to know, is this going to improve my life? Is it going to give
That's
me a bit more money, or is it going to make my commute a bit smoother or easier? That actually, what is the personal story that I'll be able to tell after this? So I used to have this kind of scenario. My commute was really bad, or I couldn't get to see my relative in hospital or whatever. And now my life has changed because of this thing. But That's great from a policy point of view, but for the people like you who were in it and who are having to deliver, what do you wish people knew about the way that politics works and how much it can do and maybe how much it can't do?
Yes. Look, the challenge always is that policies don't stand up in isolation. They will always be in a world of other things that they're bumping up against and rubbing alongside. So, you know, you mentioned the cycle hire scheme, the Boris Bikes, for example. This was a particular project that I led in my time at City Hall as the Mayor's Transport Advisor. And, you know, in the context of what we were trying to do for the city, whether it was improve the tube network, get the funding for Crossrail, get the city ready for the Olympics, improve the DLR, you know, make our roads work better, the cycle hire scheme was a relatively small project in terms of budget and the impact it would have on people. And what I mean is, we were going to go live with, say, about 4,000 or 5,000 bicycles. Now, even in 2008, we already had 500,000 journeys a day by bicycle happening. So that's still a relatively small number you're impacting. But that policy, the delivery of the bicycles, was going to actually lead to many other things. It was going to improve the routes. You were going to have better routes, more safety, more training, more policing even on bicycles. It was going to be the tip of the iceberg that was going to change the dynamic of how London looked and felt at cycling. And we knew that. But what we also knew around the actual scheme itself is that a tiny smidgen of Londoners would ever use it because of the number of bicycles. We've got, you know, 9-10 million people in London, 5,000 bicycles. The ratio says to you there's going to be a small amount of people or even visitors to London who might use that scheme. But the other side of it is that it would have an impact on almost every Londoner who saw it or saw it on TV or tourists who came in. And where they were going to be placed at the heart of London, it would have a visual impact. So even if you never used the scheme, there would be an element of every Londoner feeling this is my scheme or taking a view on the scheme. And that meant you had to be ever so careful about ensuring that when you deliver this new form of public transport, which very few people ever use, that it feels like something that belongs to them. And that's why a lot of time was spent on the design, the aesthetic, making sure that look and feel was something that people feel proud about, even if they didn't use it, that it was safe so they could take the safety numbers and go, it's a safe scheme, it works, it looks good. And all of that is part of the policy and program development of delivering something. Now, the main challenge is, do you have the time to do that, because you're always in a race against time to solve the problem or achieve the objective that you're trying to do. So the conundrum is, can you have a well thought out policy which takes into account not just the people who are going to use it, but all the other people who will be affected by it? And then can you actually make that a reality and deliver it?
And therefore, with a large number of the electorate in a way, because I guess an MP or somebody who's working for the mayor in whatever city it might be, London, Manchester, whatever, everyone is a potential voter, aren't they? So you're having to deliver things, but you're also really wishing you could say, but these are the things we can't do. We can't magic this out of thin air. There are certain things we can't change. And I do wonder whether a lot of frustration within politics is around, as you say, that balance, but turning that balance on its head, that there are things we can't do. There are things that politicians and people in political life can't do. And therefore, you know, why do we get the brickbats that we get? Maybe some people are stepping away from politics because it's just too much pressure to be attacked for the things that you can't do.
Well, I think you said the P word there, pressure. And I think you're right that the pressure is you're promising something. As soon as you promise something, there's the pressure to deliver. And then, as you quite rightly are highlighting, it's the expectation management, because you may promise something, but people may interpret that promise as something quite different. And you know, that could be for many reasons. That could be just because it's not well understood, you haven't managed to get your message across. And then there's also politics involved. You know, there's a question of, okay, you're solving this, but you're not solving the problem for everybody. And that's where you're saying, you know, can you make everybody happy all of the time? And obviously the answer to that is probably not, but you're trying to make the majority of people happy, knowing quite well that some people won't be, and some people will make political capital about the people who won't be happy. And then there's just pure politics, which is that no matter what you do, there'll be a cohort of people who just won't be happy because they don't align with your politics. So there is all of that pressure that is coming upon you, the individuals, the teams, the government, the local government team, the mayor, to as you try to deliver something. So people wonder, why is it so hard for politicians to deliver something? Well, there's many reasons, but part of it is all of those elements of pressure that are being placed upon the ability to deliver.
And yours is obviously an individual story. I don't know whether we can extrapolate from your career trajectory to others, but you did stand a couple of times to be a Conservative Party candidate. And then my understanding is that there was a time when you were on a list, but you effectively said, actually, no, I don't want to stand again. What made you make those choices?
Yeah, there were several things. I stood once in 2005 in Makerfield in near Wigan, and it was a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed being the general election candidate there, the Conservative candidate for that general election. And you learn a lot. Politics is all about learning as you go along, and especially when you engage directly with the electorate. That's what, you know, that's what politics is about, really hearing from your constituents, people on the doorstep. You know, there's nothing like, there's a privilege, I would say, to walk up a random person's to their front door, knock on their door and ask their personal opinion or something. By, you know, you absolutely get their opinion. Sometimes you get the door in your face as well, and sometimes you get, you know, invited for a nice cup of tea. But it is in no other walk of life would you just meet so many random strangers and hear their personal view on things. So that's a hugely informative activity. I was fortunate enough to work for the city of my birth, work for the mayor of London for 4 years, and that was intense. It was a huge privilege, and it was a joy. We got lots of great things done, but you got that sense of, you know, really having executive authority to deliver, but also responsibility to make sure you get it right, and scrutiny that was quite invasive. And that was the point, actually, also, we're talking about 2008 to 2012, where we were just seeing the emergence of things like Twitter and social media and various things like that. So you had a lot going on. You've got a lot, and I was the transport policy advisor to the mayor. That's the biggest agenda that the mayor has, because it's two-thirds of the mayoral budget. There's a lot to cover. So I had a fantastic time. It was a privilege to do it. I also took on after that the environmental brief and set up a digital office for London in my latter year of being at City Hall. But all of that meant that there wasn't much room for anything else in your life, and probably not in your mind either. You are trying to manage, juggle multiple challenges, literally, you know, most of the day. And you sleep well if you sleep, because you're very tired. But I think there's a sustainability point to it. Now, it wasn't quite like being an MP, but I got that sense of pressure to deliver and political pressure to argue the case of what we were trying to do. And we had a lot of, you know, media as well to deal with. And that was probably new to me. I was very naive going into the role about the amount of media scrutiny that there would be on policy, as well as personally, but on policy. But all of that meant I could tell that it was an unsustainable way of operating. And why I decided after 4 years, and, you know, I was delighted that we got so much done. And I know my former boss, Boris Johnson, was equally happy. And he always does say, you know, we achieved a lot when I was there. And he quite nicely tells me that I did a lot and we did well. But I think when we won the election in 2012, I thought, yeah, I've done my 4 years. And I kind of knew that when I went in. You can always tell the clock starts ticking to when your job might end. But if you get to the end of the 4 years, I saw a lot of people fall by the wayside along the way, for one reason or another. And I thought, if I can get to 4 years, do my term, deliver everything I want to do, then maybe I'll go back, step back into sort of inverted commas normal life for a bit, to sort of take back control of my own life and do some things that I probably wanted to do.
I mean, I think it's interesting because I've heard so many people in politics recognize that actually it isn't a normal life. that you're meant to behave like a normal human being and you're scrutinized to within an inch of your life, which of course is something else you've just referenced, which is the rise, the amplification of social media, but that actually also it's a very distorted way of functioning. It isn't the way that normal people live their lives with that 24/7 scrutiny. Can you see a time when things might change, or do you think politics will always be this way?
I think politics is ever evolving alongside what's happening in the evolution of media, because you know, we all know there was that huge change when we went into an era of rolling news, and I think that merged with Sky and Sky News, and then you know, suddenly channels that need content 24 hours a day and are looking for that content. And then that's just been turbocharged by things like Twitter and social media and Insta, and every inch of our lives, you know, being visible to each other. And that's just normal people talking to each other, let alone if you're anywhere in a role that has any kind of profile. And I guess, you know, politics is not celebrity. Celebrities use these platforms to get that cachet, get that recognition so that they can leverage it commercially. Politics doesn't do that. Politics, you know, you have a very probably discursive and diversive and discussionary and challenging environment where people either like or dislike each other. And so social media adds fuel to that fire. And so for the people who are sort of part of that or being looked at through the lens of social media, it can become quite difficult, as we've seen for politicians. You know, if any politician says something on social media, you'll have, you know, all kinds of stuff being said back to them that is terrible.
It just explodes.
And I don't think that's, I'm sure that's not right. I'm sure that has to change. You know, the howling into the night or the abuse that is thrown at politicians should not be done. You'd never do that to their face, or maybe some people would, but not at the volume. And that has an impact on those individuals. Now, actually, we're seeing campaigns and things like football and others that I've seen where they're demonstrating these players are being abused now. So it's gone to on social media and people are trying to, in fact, it's still relating back into normal life, where if you abuse someone online, that has an impact. But I think at the pinnacle of that has been people like politicians, because it seemed like fair game to abuse someone who's doing a public role, whatever that might be. And I think that takes a huge strain and impact on individuals. I wouldn't say I felt that excessively when I was there for 4 years. What I did feel was the pressure of the role and the responsibility. And I think that is the question of, you can't switch off from the job. So if you're a politician, effectively your job does not end when you leave an office and go home and sit with your family or whatever it may be. You're in any given environment you're in, that job is very much front and center. And there are very much people there who are wanting to be clear that that's your job. And I want to talk to you about that in a positive way or maybe even in a challenging way. So there's no getting away from it. And it even encroaches into every element of your family life, your personal life, your friends. It's hard to keep it away. So the best politicians, or the politicians who have longevity, find a way of managing that so that they have an area where probably they have space, maybe safe space, that stuff doesn't encroach into, that they can sort of keep it out. But otherwise, it'll be constantly around you, 24 hours a day, all your life.
So that brings me to my final question, actually, because and it's a beautiful segue. You can definitely be my guest again. I love the way in which you recognize that it's that sense of, I suppose, the mindset that you might need to have if you're entering politics, to recognize that it's a 24/7 role. But how, given your experience and your working actually in the forefront of it, but also adjacent to other politicians, what would your advice be to someone who might be contemplating going into it? You know, we have got a general election, we assume it's going to be in the next sort of 15 to 18 months time. There might be people tempted to throw their hat in the ring. What kind of mindset do you think you need to have?
I think firstly, I would say to anyone who wants to be involved in politics and has a passion for it, please do, right? You always want people who are passionate and want to get engaged. But I'd say consider that it's not just a job. And I think people do recognize that. But politics is a kind of job that nobody knows what it's going to be like until they actually get there. And I think that's always a bit challenging. So that's the first difficult thing to understand. I think the other thing is that take your time. You'll find when you're in politics, everything is a rush because, you know, you know you only have a certain amount of time before the electorate, the media, or someone will cast judgment on you. So you're trying desperately to work very fast to get something done when you're there. But your journey to get there, take your time, learn as much as you can, take on board as much as you can. And, you know, I think you can always dip in and out as well. I always say politics, for me, has been a hobby that at one point became a job, but it's a passion that is part of my life. And I'm very fortunate to be able to serve and have served and will serve in the future. But I think people use this phrase, it's a long game. I don't hope, it's not trying to be, you know, dismissive of it. It's about longevity and your personal longevity, not the longevity. Politics will always be there. But for you, how do you learn and adapt the things that you pick up as you go along the way to make you better in the political environment, to make you able to have more of an impact, to make you sustainable, to play longer in the political environment, to deliver the benefit you're trying to deliver? Because there's no point politics chewing you up and spitting you out, which does seem to happen to a lot of people because of the pressure and the pace of being involved in that theater. So take your time, learn about yourselves, you know, build that resilience. People talk about being resilient, but resilience takes time to understand, because to be resilient, you have to understand yourself and how you will deal in those environments. And that takes experience, doing it, gradually building it up so that when you get there, and everybody, you know, who wants to do it should do it, because when you get there, it's amazing. Because you can help people. And that's the fundamental reason that I know most people that I know, get involved in politics.
Cool, Veer Ranger. Thank you very much indeed for being my guest on the Couch.
Thank you, Lucy.